From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we, I think we've headed right into summer. I think we skipped, it seems like 2 weeks ago it was still cold and rainy and snowing in the Sierra and wherever you're listening. I know in this vast diocese of Sacramento, we've got all different kinds of weather patterns going on, but it seems like we went instantly to summer and just skipped spring altogether. Well, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Last week, I felt really fortunate to go to the annual dinner of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, the benefit for the poor, sold out at the Doubletree here in Sacramento, and Father Dan Madigan was the keynote speaker and just brought down the house. Walt Gray was the master of ceremonies, and just a wonderful, wonderful event, and it reminded me a little bit of an event that's coming up, the annual vocations dinner, and we're pleased to welcome in by phone our good friend George Bagley. George, good day to you.
Good day, Bob. How are you?
Doing very, very well. I was just describing a little bit about the St. Vincent de Paul dinner, and the vocations dinner is right up there at the top of the list, as well as an event that is very meaningful, very important, and yet still a lot of fun and a lot of good food.
That's right. It will be again this year at St. Paul's in Florence.
On Florin Road, yeah.
Florin Road.
The nice thing about the vocations dinner is you folks move it around every year.
Right, because we would like to, you know, have as many people have an opportunity to come.
Right.
You know, our diocese is so large, so we try to move it around to afford people the opportunity to attend.
And George, this is a major event sponsored by the Knights of Columbus.
Well, you know, it's sponsored by the Knights of Columbus, and it's in conjunction with the Office of Priestly and Religious Vocations.
Right.
Of the Diocese. And but it's not a Knights only event. It's a diocese parish event.
No, in fact, most of the Knights are in the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, we're out there, you know, making sure that people are well seated and taken care of, you know, things like that. But it's been so encouraging, especially you know, after COVID. You know, we did not have an event in 2020 because of COVID.
Right, I remember.
But the rebound, 2021 at St. Mary's in Sacramento and 2022 at Good Shepherd in Oak Grove was sold out. We couldn't fit any more people.
Yeah.
So great, yes. So it's a wonderful event, and we're so happy that, you know, many people from the parishes and the diocese can attend.
Yeah, and people should know that this is really for everybody.
Right.
It's the thing that's very, very, very important is that vocations are so important to us.
Yes.
And but this event is not just for potential seminarians or just you know, sort of inside baseball, if you will. This is for all of us. And I know usually one of my daughters comes with me, and she's away at college, and she wants to know when is the event, right? You know, she's putting that on her calendar ahead of anything, and she will come home for that weekend.
Ahead of everything.
Yeah, because it's that wonderful of an event.
Well, it's June 24th.
Yes.
In St. Paul's, and you know, you said, like, you know, it's important for everyone. Well, right now we have, we have 10 seminarians, and I understand that 3 have applied, and of course, in today's world, these gentlemen, they go through a lot of scrutiny. This is the priests that have been coming in our last, you know, several years have been really wonderful men, really very well trained and really prepared to go out to the parishes.
Yes, indeed, and this event comes on the heels of the annual basketball game, which will be on June the 20th. at Christian Brothers High School. And as I understand it, they're recruiting seminarians, and one of the requirements is they got to be able to shoot free throws.
Well, you know, that's physical. That's one of the things that they emphasize now.
They really do. They
physically fit.
Obviously joking about the free throws, but they do emphasize physical, mental fitness, and those two things obviously go hand in hand.
Right. And some of them, I'm telling you, there are a few of those seminarians I wouldn't want to wrestle in a dark alley.
I know. And I wouldn't want to play basketball against them either. That's always such a lively, fun game. Christian Brothers, the gym is always just packed. And by the way, we'll give you more details about it, but it's Christian Brothers High School. It's the 20th of June. It's a weeknight. They do have a great snack bar open. You can have dinner there. And the highlight for me is at the end of the game when the priests, the seminarians, usually Bishop Soto is there, sometimes Bishop Wiegand is there, and they all link arms and sing Salve Regina.
And they do that also.
They also do it. That's exactly right.
And, you know, both of these go hand in hand. You know, number one, getting to know who the seminarians are and learning what they go through to become priests.
Yeah, it's not, you don't just walk in the door of the vocations office one day and say to Father Memo, hi, I want to be a priest. When do I get my parish?
Can we schedule it for next week? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've been to Mass a couple of times. I think I can do that. You know, no, it is a long process. But, you know, the thing that I've just always am amazed at, because over the many years we've done the Bishop's Hour, 24 years, I've talked to a lot of seminarians and a lot of priests about their seminary days, and there's no rush in their minds. It's not I need to hurry up and get seminary over so I can be a priest.
Right.
They enjoy being in seminary. They enjoy what they're learning. They enjoy the spiritual journey, and they just see it as from the time they started seminary until the time they retire as a priest, and you never really retire, as just one long journey. They don't see, well, I've just got, like a lot of us who went to college, we couldn't wait to get out of college. You know, it's like, well, I want to get on with life, but I need to finish my college. They don't look at seminary that way at all. They look at seminary as an enormous opportunity.
Well, yeah, the one thing, you know, the old saying, once a priest, always a priest.
That's right.
And I know, speaking with different seminarians, they'll tell you that once they join the seminary, once they start, and the more they know, the more they realize how much there is to know. And it just, they realize that it's a really long process.
Right. Yeah, it can be a number of years. That's for sure. Depending, too, on some seminarians have already been to college. Not all of them. But some have already been to college. And so that probably would perhaps cut down on it a little bit. But the one thing I like about the dinner, and besides the dinner itself, which is pretty darn good, is each seminarian gets a chance to talk, and not a speech, not a long talk, but just a hi. You know, some are longer than others, but some are about two sentences. Hi, my name's Bill.
Yeah.
I'm from Rio Vista. I'm glad to be here. And they sit down, and everybody applauds and kind of smiles. Maybe he's a little bit shy, and then somebody else gets up and maybe talks for 3 or 4 minutes and tells a funny story about how he decided to become a priest, and not always a funny story, sometimes a very moving story, but it's just nice to put a face and a voice to these people.
We have all of them will get up and say hello, and we do have one guest speaker, and that's Edgar Lozano Cuevas, who is 2 years out from being ordained, and he will be the guest speaker. He'll give a little bit more detail and explain his life and why he decided to be a priest. And I think he'll probably compare that to most of the other seminaries, some similar experiences.
Yeah, you always have one that has a little longer talk. I'm trying to remember who it was last year, but he was just so good. He was so
Ben Condon.
Yeah, Ben Condon. Yeah, just so compelling. Yeah.
And most of these, I know Ben is from St. Mel's,
right?
Which they have a fantastic vocations program at St. Mel's,
right?
And there are, most of these brothers, most of these seminarians are from around, the Sacramento area.
Yeah, and Bishop Soto's put a real emphasis on domestic. Mm-hmm. Bringing priests in from the area, not to discount the many, many, many priests who have come and served this diocese so well from other countries.
Right.
But he has put an emphasis on that, and it's bearing fruit.
Right. Another good aspect I like it that we do every year is we emphasize altar servers.
Mm-hmm.
We like to, when people order tables, for example, this year the tables are $400 for a table of eight. And what a lot of the Knights Councils do, they will ask the parish for a couple of altar servers and their parents. And that usually takes about almost maybe six people right there, and then maybe a few of the Knights members will go in that table with them, and they'll encourage parents and altar servers to come,
mm-hmm.
because there's our future right there.
Oh, absolutely, and the one real joyful part of the evening is when the bishop recognizes the altar servers,
mm-hmm.
and hands them each a certificate, calls them up individually. Actually, I call them up individually, and the bishop is standing in front of the podium to greet them, and then poses for a photo with each one of them, and their names on the certificate, and these kids are just beaming. I mean, that'd be something for people that are listening now. If one of your children is an altar server, they will be honored at this event. And
yes.
We'd love to have you sign up, call ahead of time, and mm-hmm. let people know. You don't just bring them, so that they have the certificates ready for them, and right. It will be a real treat for your kids.
Right. I do know this. I know that the office, vocations office, is sending out a schedule of summer events, I think, which will be in the diocese website in May. And the information for the dinner will be there.
Good.
Also, any person can contact the parish, their local Knights of Columbus Council in that parish, and they will have all the information they need and how to order the table, or a table of eight, or just to order individual seating.
How did the Knights get involved in this?
Well, one of the most important things that the Knights do is when we talk to people joining the Knights, we always say, what is the primary thing that the Knights do? We support Father.
Mm-hmm.
Anything Father needs, the Knights, we're considered, I think very proudly, to be the right arm of our Catholic Church, in one of the right arms, at least,
mm-hmm.
That serve. And over the years, the Knights have done so many things, not just for our diocese, but worldwide.
You've really helped to transform the world.
Supporting our priests is number one.
Right.
We cannot have a Catholic Church without a priest.
Right. Well, and we know that there are a lot of distractions in the world these days, and there's, I don't know if the term priest shortage is correct, but it's something that we need to be ever vigilant to. I remember years ago having the opportunity to talk to now Cardinal Dolan. At the time, he was Archbishop Dolan in New York, and he said the number one thing is family support. you know, that, yeah, we end up with a lot of people who maybe the family, this wasn't their first choice. But in so many cases, it's when a kid comes home and says, I'm considering the priesthood, that very first reaction of the parents is very is very important.
It is, yeah. It's surprising. You know, you would think that most parents would just fall on their knees and thank God, but a lot of parents, you know, they're concerned about their young man or young woman, and they want to make sure that she's deciding something that is for life, you know.
In fact, I remember one speaker at one of the vocations dinners who actually highlighted that and said, I didn't have that support.
Mm-hmm.
But years later, that support came after he had become a priest.
Right.
The family, it wasn't like the family relented. The family was celebrating, and was kind of, I guess, not really ashamed, but regretting that they hadn't celebrated it right from the get-go.
Right. And, you know, these young men and women are up against so many, like you said, obstacles, you know, the way some people look at priesthood, you know, we know, as practicing Catholics, we know that 99% of our priests are just outstanding.
Right.
And it's that 1% sometimes that just, you know, puts sort of a shadow or a pale over everything,
right.
You know.
Yeah. So, yeah. Talk about the food.
Okay. Well, I know your favorite meal is there. It'd be buckhorn again.
Yes.
Previous local owner down here in Jacksonville, Tom McLaughlin, has come out of retirement to go over to Florin and bring buckhorn there.
Wow.
So, I know it's going to be really done well, like it is every year.
I presume it's tri-tip?
It's tri-tip and all the, you know, the roasted vegetables, garlic mashed potatoes, and I mean, they fill your plate. It's you know, the cost of food has gone up, but they do a great job.
Yeah.
You have to have two hands to carry your plate.
You know, it's funny. I know I've had the packed plate every time, and the thing I really remember, as good as, I mean, the buckhorn is famous for tri-tip, but they've made tri-tip a household name, but the mashed potatoes are just like to die for,
and the chicken also,
and the chicken
part of the plate. I mean, you get all of that.
Yeah,
they take good care of us.
Yeah, it's
I think the price is very reasonable, you know, now for the cost.
Oh my goodness, especially, you know, I mean, when it's a fundraiser, you go, okay, a portion of this ticket is going to pay for the meal, and a portion of the ticket is going, but I mean, nowadays, as you say, the price of food going up,
yeah,
if you can buy a table of eight for $400, go out to take eight people out to dinner at a restaurant and see what the bill comes to.
Right, and of course that includes dessert, coffee, you know, everything.
Everything, and the restaurant is not a fundraiser. It's not,
right.
You know.
Also, I would like to mention, Bob, well, there are two dates to be aware of. If it's $400 a table and $60 for individual, if received by June 9th.
Okay.
Now, after June 9th, it's $425 a table and $65 for
individual.
And this is, of course, to cover any extra expenses if we have more, you know, sometimes the buckhorn needs to be notified, you know,
sure,
at the time. So we have to encourage people to purchase before the night.
And this is, you know, this is a fair little ways to go for the buckhorn from Vacaville to come to St. Paul's out on Florin.
Well, they have other venues. They have a couple venues in Sacramento, but at that particular date, they were both already booked.
Mm-hmm.
So the previous owner, who's still on the board of Buckhorn, he's taken it upon himself to bring it out to Florin. You know, he doesn't want us to miss out.
Well, that's great. That's just great. And we we'll get to. I think, you know, this is the one year the basketball and the dinner are so close together. Maybe we'll show some video of the basketball game.
Yeah, there you go. Well, let me know, and I'll talk to some of our expert brain mates and know how to do that.
Yeah, the auto, the AV people, as we used to call them. Yeah, yeah. I know nothing about that stuff.
I know. I'm the same way. I'm at their mercy.
Yeah, yeah.
But we really do want to make the dinner. We always try to make the dinner entertaining for people as well, you know.
I go back to my daughter who you know, mm-hmm. like any other teenager, she likes to have a good time, and she can't wait for the location dinner. It's like she circles that date as soon as I give it to her. And
and you know, the bishop has such a strict schedule, and we always had the dinner earlier. We had the gathering at 4 o'clock, and then right. the dinner. Five, and that's to accommodate the bishop because he has such a tight schedule. However, and usually we have him from 4 to 6, but I've never seen him leave at 6.
I haven't seen him leave either.
There until 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Well, he enjoys it. He really enjoys it.
Yeah. No, it's. But you know, I've always felt that. That's a better time anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. You're sort of late afternoonish and mm-hmm. early evening.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that, you know, they attend the 5 o'clock mass at all of our parishes.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if you get to the social hour at 4 o'clock, you're going to have a parking spot early.
Right.
And some people do come right after mass. They come over for dinner. Right. You know? A little late, but they usually, you know, if they ever have made a reservation, they will be accommodated.
Well, I've told the story before that the year you had it at St. Patrick's up in Placerville, my daughter and I went, and I checked, and they had, I believe their vigil mass started at 4 o'clock, and so we were there, and I said, let's just go up early and go to mass. And the dinner was starting maybe at 5 that year. And as I'm guessing 4 or 5 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, something like that. And so we're sitting there in mass and participating in mass, and we start to get some smoke coming through the building. And it wasn't incense, you know, and then it was visual between, we were sitting near the back of the church, and it was a visual impairment. I mean, it wasn't blocking the altar, but it was like, you could see that there was, that it was there. And next thing you know, it comes a little bit more our way, and we're waiting to hear fire engines or something, you know, like the roof's on fire or something. And then we looked at each other and said, that smoke smells pretty good. and the knights were cooking the tri-tip outside, and you know, it was like June-ish or something, and some right. of the doors to the church were open. I think you doubled the audience that night. That's right. Everybody's going, what's that? What is that? I want some of that. So
this year it's going to be ready for them. You know, it'll be well done.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
We're really looking forward to it. Every year, Bob, I've only been, this is the 10th annual. This is my 5th year. And like I said, unfortunately, 2020, COVID canceled everything. But from St. Joseph's in 2019 and St. Mary's in Sacramento and Good Shepherd last year, it's been sold out.
Yes, people, yeah.
So I would urge people to, you know, contact on the flyer. There's information. I don't know. I could give Michael a number for questions.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. George Bagley, and the phone number is 707-372-4913. And there is, this year there is online reservations, and I can give you that. It's the online information. It's a mm-hmm. KFC Voc Dinner. KFCDOCDINNER.org. I'll say it one more time. KFCDOCDINNER.org. And you can register and pay for it at the same time online if you wish to.
And that's not Kentucky Fried Chicken.
No.
Even, yeah, I sometimes wonder if somebody tries to contact the Knights of Columbus.
And I've punched numbers in my iPhone or whatever, and sometimes it comes up Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It's K of.
Yes. Yeah, maybe make a convert of Colonel right. Sanders.
Right. So, yeah, this is the first time that we're accepting online reservations.
Oh, very good.
And so, you know, it's a new venture for us, and we're trying to, you know, keep up with the young folks and encourage. And sometimes, you know, it's kind of funny the way the world is today. If you present something like that to the younger people, they're more inclined to come because it's more modern. It's more, you know, more they're able to. Make a reservation quickly.
Right. George, you know, I've always wanted to ask you, and mm-hmm. you make it look so easy. You know, people will say, oh, this dinner is just flawless. It's just a piece of cake. You know, it just flows perfectly, and the food's good, and the food's on time, and the whole thing. And I say to people, I say, well, that's because somebody's working really hard. It makes it look like it's easy. But it's not easy. It looks easy because somebody's working so hard. What's the hardest part of your job and the people you work with in putting this dinner on?
Well, the hardest part of my job is that I'll be honest with you. I have to really be honest with you. That the best part of my job is that my wife is right next to me when it comes to, you know, keeping me on track. And, you know, she's the wife of a knight. You know, our knights can't do things without a good wife, you know, without mm-hmm. your wife. And because we are a family organization. But the hardest part of the job is we start in January planning.
And do you really? Wow.
Well, we meet once a month mm-hmm. at an office with a father and sister and Marcella and the parish that's involved. And this year it's St. Paul's and it's... Mother Seton Council 6922 of St. Paul's, and mm-hmm. They're usually their grand knight, and some of their officers come to the meeting, and we start planning. And the hardest part of the job is just staying on track and you know, trying to you know, make sure that everyone gets the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's wonderful because everybody's so willing to help out and so willing to plan this.
Yeah, well, it's just such a joyous event, and it's for such a good cause, and I mean it's about the.
We don't want to forget our sisters as well, you mm-hmm. know, our young women, and a lot of the sisters will come. We always invite our priests and our sisters to come,
right?
And as a matter of fact, last year one of the speakers was a nun.
That's exactly right,
and that's important. We want our young women to feel that. We need them as much as we need our priest.
And she had just a tremendous story of faith as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So if people are listening and have a son or daughter who is an altar server, how do they get that word to the right people so that they can get their certificate?
Most parishes have, you know, an altar server coordinator. And they are all aware of this dinner.
Okay.
And we do, like I said, Marcella, she'll be sending out the summer event schedules in the diocese, and they can look into that schedule and see when the dinner is. And they can also call their, you know, the parish office and tell them that they, you know, they're interested in the dinner, and they will put them in touch with the altar server coordinator to make sure that happens.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. George, go ahead.
It really is geared toward altar service. We really want to have a lot of altar servers come and be ready.
Yeah, and it's interesting too how many times I've talked to people in seminary or priests and I said, "Well, tell me about your vocation," and they said, "Well, it all started as an altar server."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I it's probably. Kind of like you guys in the major leagues, you say, where did you start? And they say, well, I played Little League Baseball.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I'm sure you and I were probably pre-Vatican altar servers, maybe?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Oh, everything was in Latin.
yeah, I know. We both know Latin, don't we, George?
A little bit. At least the mass part.
I remember, I don't know why, maybe it's just the way it rolled off the tongue, but when we were little kids, we just loved hearing Et cum spiritu tuo. We loved that. We just,
remember the joke when the school kids were saying, what is the Pope's phone number? Et cum spiritu tuo.
Yep.
And with thy spirit.
Yeah, and with thy spirit. And we've been blessed with that ever since. George, thanks so much for what you do here, and we'll look forward to talking to you again a couple of times.
I hope so. I'd like to talk again before the dinner.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for having us, the Knights of Columbus, on today.
Oh, thanks, George, and thanks for all you do, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
God bless you, Bob.
Hey, God bless you too, George. That's George Bagley, who is from the Knights of Columbus and the coordinator of this great, great dinner. We will take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Moises De Leon from the Office of Family and Respect Life. You're listening to Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunnan.
Thank you, Moises, for all you do here, and thanks for that wonderful introduction. Jennifer Campbell joins us. Jennifer, wearing her name tag in case I forgot
of course.
Your name.
We all wear our name tags in this in our department. We've just decided it's what we want to do. So,
no, it's good, you know, because it's nice to always know a person's name. I should wear a name tag that when I look in the mirror, I know who I am.
Well, and it's great when we're out in parishes. We have these name tags, and you know, they recognize our names, and especially, I mean, advertising for camp. I'm sitting in parishes like every Sunday.
Yes,
just and I've got the name tag on, so then you know. It does throw me off sometimes because they'll say my name and I forget that I'm wearing it.
That you're wearing it.
Yeah. So
well, the worst part is when somebody calls you by name and you don't know their name.
Yes.
And you're thinking, uh-oh, I can't ask them their name because they know my name. And
that so does.
And I live in a town I grew up in.
Right.
And so you're running into old catechism teachers, old coaches, old next door neighbors.
Right.
And I just call them, how you doing? You know,
and
mm-hmm. It's too late to ask them their name.
Well, I mean, for a while I was working in a community organization plus at my parish in Elk Grove. So everywhere I went, like my friends from work would be like, how do you know everyone? Or kids would come up to me and say hi, and like they'd know my name. And because I was just so, you know, involved in different things. And it was always so funny because, like, I don't know, 75% of the time I knew their name. Yeah. The rest of the time I was like, dude, it's so good to see you. And then, you know, introduce them to your friend. But
my biggest problem with names is when you're actually introduced to somebody.
Yes.
And so you're saying, hi, how are you? You're trying to smile and say, well, what do you do? Where are you from or something? Yeah. And 10 seconds later, I go, I didn't hear their name. I didn't hear it enough to register.
It didn't register yet. And that's, yeah. You know, part of the fun of camp, actually, is we, you know, all of us
Jennifer
staff.
Jennifer does run Camp
I
Pandola.
I do run Camp Pandola. And all of our staff, we all wear name tags. But the campers don't always wear name tags. So I do have to try to, like, really focus on, like, you are Cabin 7. Your name is Fred. Like,
right.
During check-in, I, like, because I, myself and maybe one other person will be doing part of check-in where we're telling them their cabins and welcoming them to camp. And I'm always, like, looking down at my paper, look up at their face, down at the paper, yeah, up at their yeah. face. So I make sure to lock the names in, and I do okay. You know, I do my best. That's all we can ask.
Well, and then they're all gone.
So I got to start it all over again on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, there's and the other thing is, as the director, I always say, like, if I really know your name, that means you are either really good or really not.
Probably you know the troublemakers.
Yeah. So it's good when I it's sometimes better if I don't know your name. Yeah. Some of the campers are like, it's better if Miss Jen doesn't know.
Do the campers call you Miss Jen?
They do. We all go by Miss or Mister. So I'm Miss Jen.
Your family, your friends, they call you Jen?
Most of them, mostly. Yeah. Most of them do. Yeah, so they call me Miss Jen at camp. And I really like that we do that. And I've actually pretty much always gone by Miss Jen. So when I worked in Elk Grove and when I worked in my parish, St. Joseph's, because the DRE would constantly introduce me as Miss Campbell. And I'm like, no, that's my mom.
That's your mom.
Because my mom also was a catechist and volunteered. Right. So I was like, no, I'm Miss Jen. And the kids would, like, we got a new DRE and I remember, like, kids correcting her. They're like, no. Her name is Miss Jen. Like, who is this person, Miss Campbell, you're talking about? So, yeah, I know I've always just even, like, gone by that. So
oh, that's great.
It's just who I am. Yeah, so we're getting close to summer, though. I mean, it's getting warmer outside, finally.
Warmer. It's like, I think we skipped spring.
I feel that way, too.
It was 2 weeks ago. They were getting 4 feet of snow in the Sierra, and yeah. It was freezing down here and raining. And and the next thing you know, it's supposed to be in the 90s.
Right. So we're getting close because of that. And we can definitely feel it now with the weather change. So it is encouraging people to register for camp, which is really good. We want to try to fill all of our 5 weeks of camp this year. We're getting close. But I'm really excited because we have our chaplains locked in now, and which is such an important part of camp.
Is this relatively new to have a chaplain there every week?
It is. It's something in 2018. Yes. I'm trying to, like, do the backwards math there. 2018, when he was on his diaconate year, Father Dean Marshall came up, and because he was on his diaconate year and got assigned, we said, well, can we make him the chaplain? Mm-hmm. And we kind of created this position that specifically was a chaplain. So he was there to, he led spiritual activities, set up for mass, arrange for the priest to be there each week because he wasn't a priest yet. And so we kind of created that position. And the following year, after he was ordained, you know, he wanted to come back for the whole summer, but that just wasn't in the cards. So in talking to Bishop,
I can see Father Dean wanted to do that. Yes,
he suggested that we recruit and has been very supportive of having a priest who is up there each week. So we ask them to volunteer their time from their parish. If they need coverage, we help get coverage for the parish for the week, because they are home in time at the end of the week to do Sunday masses, and they don't need to leave generally until after Sunday masses at their parish.
Right.
So yeah, so we've been arranging that since 2019, I guess, was the first summer we had an assigned priest that came and stayed all week. So we've only done it a few summers because we did have to take that little break for that little global pandemic thing. But yeah, so we get a priest each week. They come, they stay with us. We have a separate cabin for them to stay in. They're there to offer daily mass. The priests will go on hikes with the kids. They'll do activities with them. They're also there to support the staff, which is so important. It's also support for me to have kind of, as I like to say, another adult in the room with me sometimes, because not that my staff aren't adults, but, you know, I've got a lifetime of experience on most of them. I'm an adult. I'm not trying to learn what adulting is. And so it's just nice to have another person that I can just talk to. And if I need someone to, like, if I'm having a bad day, someone that I can talk to. And if the staff are having a bad day, somebody other than their supervisor, who is me, to talk to. Has been such a blessing. We're able to then have the Blessed Sacrament there all the time. So last year the staff requested it, and we turned what was our sacristy — it's still kind of the sacristy — but we also turned it into a small adoration chapel that the staff could use on their breaks.
That's the first time you've had an adoration chapel.
It's the first time we've been able to have that. And so, you know, it's adoration in the tabernacle, of course, but yeah, it's allowed those kind of things to organically happen at camp, which has made the experience for staff so much better, which in turn makes the experience, especially the spiritual experience at camp, stronger for those, for the campers, because the staff are getting their spiritual needs met. They're able to, if they need to, if they want to, go to confession. If they need to, if they want to take an hour and give themselves an holy hour, which is something, you know, we weren't really able to do previously, without having chaplains there. And even that opportunity of daily mass, you know, The campers, we let them choose and decide, because not everyone is a daily communicant.
So it's sort of first thing in the morning?
We do it in the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
We do it in the afternoon, and it's one of the choices the campers can make. Oh, okay. So their cabin, last year, one of the days that I got to go to daily mass, and I really feel like it was such a privilege to be here, but in that mass, it was the week that Father Marr, who's now in Knight's Landing at the parish there.
St. Paul,
thank you. He was our chaplain that week. And it happened to be that just one cabin went, and it was the cabin that was led by Mr. Alex, one of our seminarians, Alejandro, was leading that. And there was just a group of boys. And so it was just like me and this group of teenage boys at mass. And Father was able to give a homily that was specific for them, where they got to answer his questions and talk back, you know, to priests always put questions in their homilies and little kids answer, but it's not the norm, right? So they got to have that kind of conversation.
Boy, that's great.
And that's not something you're going to get at your parish, where you've got 100 people sitting in the room. And it's those kind of experiences they're life changing. And it's a memory, even for me, it's a memory that's locked in my brain of this mass at this day on, you know, at camp, because it was such a small group of us. Mm-hmm. And so it's really exciting to be able to offer that to the campers. And, you know, again, it's an invitation. Not every camper decides they're going to go to daily mass, and that's okay too.
Sure.
But it's good to have those options for them. And we get to have an adoration holy hour during the week, one of the nights. That's one of our activities.
Do you explain adoration to the kids?
We do. I have been generally doing that. I have a little talk that I borrowed from my friend who's a diocesan director in Orange County. And so it's a quick little explanation of what is a monstrance? Why do we use a monstrance that looks like what does it look like? Mm-hmm. Why does it look like the sun? Why does it not look like a house like they used to look like?
Right.
What are we doing in here? Why are we doing this? So we do a little talk for, 5-10 minutes, and then the priest generally will do exposition. And then we do, and they'll often do a little talk too, to kind of follow up on what I said or relate it back to the readings. We have music and just some quiet time. Mm-hmm. I think that's there's so few times in our lives that we're really allowed to just be silent and there to be silence. Yeah. And since there are no, like, no one has phone service, nothing, like, there's nothing in that chapel but, like, Jesus and a candle. And, like, there is just something so quiet about that. Even, like, the most rambunctious kid suddenly gets, like, you can see their whole body quieting.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's just something you don't see every day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really love that we have these chaplains come up. So we've got pretty much all of them, like, locked into their dates. I mean, there's always something that could come up and change it. But I'm really excited that we've got them.
Can you release it?
I can. I'm going to have to pull out my phone so I've got the text message. So I have...
This is breaking news.
It's breaking news. It just happened today. Yeah. So we have, for the first week of camp, Father Dean will be there for Weird Science Week.
Well, that's good. I think that fits Father Dean.
It fits him quite nicely.
You know, a couple of years ago, at the priest seminary and basketball game,
yeah,
I do the PA announcing part. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, well, Father Dean will... we'll help you out.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a guess.
He's just one of my favorite people. And if you want to get him candy that he likes fireball candies, okay. Those little hard candies. And then for our second week of camp, Father Amir, I think I'm saying his name right, he is the new pastoral vicar at Chico. St. John the Baptist in Chico.
Okay.
Father Eric Pereira, mm-hmm. from St. Isidore's is going to be there for the week of July 9th.
In Yuba City. A little bit closer for him.
Yeah, a little bit closer. The week after that is going to be Father Marr from St. Paul's and Knight's Landing. Mm-hmm. That's for our teen week. And then our last week is going to be Father Raj from Sacred Heart and Anderson.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And we also have a seminarian who will be coming up with us. It's one of our newer seminarians, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be coming up and being one of our staff for the summer. That was his summer assignment. So
he's going to be there for the whole summer.
Matthew's going to be there the whole summer.
Wow.
It's his summer assignment. I'm hoping that some of our other, like, on their days off, maybe some of our past seminarians and staff will come up and visit us,
so
too.
So what kind of staff duties will he have?
So he will be just like all the other staff.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be assigned to boys' cabins. And usually the seminarians also help with mass setup. So they'll mm-hmm. Be in charge of the chapel. Last year, Alejandro was in charge of the chapel. So it makes it, again, one less thing that that I'm doing. So he set up for mass for us every day or especially made sure we had enough hosts. And if we needed stuff, let me know. And, you know, took care of all of the linens and things like that. So
the Sunday mass mm-hmm. is for the incoming campers?
It's for the incoming campers.
And their parents, if they want to stay?
Yeah, if their parents, if they want to stay.
What time is the...
The mass is... Again, it depends on what time the priests arrive.
Yeah.
Approximately 4:30.
Okay. Well, at that point, probably the parents are probably need to have gone.
A lot of them have gone because drop off is between 2 and 4. So
okay.
There will be some that will stay.
Some will stay, but
some will
stay. I think some of them are a little nervous that their kid is gonna. Oh, mom and dad are staying. Oh,
yeah.
I'm glad.
Well, and I think it's important. Like, I always talk about this with parents. Like, it's important that you make sure your kid knows that you think they're going to make it and that how excited you are for them to attend camp,
right.
And that what a great experience they're going to have. And if internally you are like a little nervous about it, talk to me, but like, let's not necessarily show right. that to the camper because right. it will cause some homesickness, of right. course. But so we'll have, so then the priest that is coming up to be the chaplain will say that Sunday mass. Bishop is also coming up one of the days, but I cannot remember which day that is off the top of my head. So, Bishop will be coming up one of the Sundays too. So it's always fun when Bishop comes up
So they come up on a Sunday.
He That's comes right. up on a Sunday and we'll do one of our masses for us, celebrate one of the masses. one of my favorites was we moved Mass, because we usually do it outside. We moved it into the chapel because there was a possibility of rain. And I was like, I'm not dealing with that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be last minute having to move us into the chapel.
Right.
Just going to call it. And it, of course, wasn't raining. Bishop starts Mass. It's not raining. Starts his homily. It's not raining. He makes a comment about how it's not raining. And as soon as he said it, he turned around and it started raining. I was like, well, thank goodness.
I think that happened to the Pope at World Youth Day.
Probably. But I mean, that does happen a lot in those outdoor masses, especially like World Youth Days. That,
yeah.
I mean, it's we've had rain it on fire in the past. So
yeah,
it happens.
Right.
But it was just really funny because I was like, I'm so glad I moved us inside. Even though Bishop was like, it's not raining. But
that's
it was
great.
Right as soon as he said it.
So, wow. So why is there a chapel there? I mean, I know why there's a chapel there, but how did that come to be? I mean, it was a sawmill.
It was a sawmill. And so that is actually, it was one of the buildings that the diocese built. These dates could be totally made up in my head. I believe that it was completed 81. And they started building it like 79. And so it was built by the director at the time, arranged to finally put a chapel in. It's Our Lady of the Snows Chapel. And it's just a big open space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a beautiful chapel. It has huge windows that you can kind of looking out from the windows, which is the windows are behind the altar. You can see all of camp. And so that's why we have a chapel. Like, it was put in later. It was one of the, you know, the camp had been around for 20 years at the time ish. And that's what ish.
Do you use it for anything else?
We do. We actually use it as a kind of a meeting space. Mm-hmm. So we use it for Mass, for adoration, and kind of quiet activities. Sometimes we'll do like guided meditation in there, and it's nice and quiet and calming.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. We'll do some of our staff training in there just because it's a nice big open space.
Right.
So it's a multi-purpose space, but it's one of the nicest places on camp. The kids' shoes are not allowed in it. We make them take their shoes off in the lobby, and then they can come in with their socks. And it's also pretty funny because the priests all recognize it and take their shoes off too. especially priests that were campers previously or were staff. Father Chris Frazier, whenever he comes up,
right.
He's like, I know the shoe rule. And, you know, so I think it's that those kind of things. It does keep the carpet nicer. Like, it keeps it a little cleaner.
It's got carpet?
It's carpeted, yeah. I believe it's the only thing carpeted in camp. Maybe, like, the staff room is carpeted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got carpet, but it's the nicest, cleanest carpet. It's
wow.
Great. It's fantastic. So, but it's clean because, you know, again, it's the chapel. And
does it have heat or air conditioning or anything
in between?
It has
heat, and it has a stove for heat, and then it has a fan.
Like a wood stove?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It has a fan underneath it, which if you get it working correctly, it blows some cold air.
Yeah.
But we use a lot of fans in there to keep it cooler for the kids in the summer.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason we do Mass outside a lot, is because it does kind of get warm in there because big windows. But
yeah.
It is so, it's just the feel is different when you have Mass out in the chapel versus outside. And
so how often do you have it outside?
Most of the time now we do it in the chapel, but mm-hmm. it'll depend on how much our numbers grow, because it does have a capacity. Like, we wouldn't be able to do, if we were able to get like fully, like every cabin completely full with 10 kids in them, like 120, we wouldn't be able to do it in the chapel.
So 120 would be your max
a camp. Mm-hmm. That would be every single cabin being used at its capacity. Yeah.
And how does that happen fairly often?
Generally, we've put our number at, last year it was at 60. We usually do about 60 to 70 of just the traditional campers.
Mm-hmm.
Plus then we will tend to have, like, if we have mini weekers, that's can be another 20. So that gets us up to like 80.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's a trip that week, that could be a few more, plus staff. So, I mean, we could have up to 100 and something people, just not necessarily that many campers. We could, I mean, in the future, like, but again, it would be getting way, we'd need to get more staff and have a good base of staff that we could pull from. Otherwise, that wouldn't work.
And do you have daily prayer?
We do. We have prayer every morning. It's the first thing we do as a camp. So once all the kids have come down the hill, use the restroom, that kind of stuff. Then they'll hear a bell ring and we start with flag. We put up the American flag and we say the flag salute and then we have prayer. So that's led each day. A different cabin is in charge of that. And then the chaplain helps them make sure that they're prepared. And then every evening when this, we do it before dinner just because it's not exactly when the sun goes down, but it's an easy time to do it. We do prayer and take the flag down. So we take the flag down in silence and fold it up. And then we have an evening prayer that is led by a different cabin group. And then all of the cabins individually do nighttime prayer. Oh. So those are all different depending on the counselor, what they want to do. A lot of them do kind of a like the I'm grateful for, like the thing that I need prayer for, the thing I'm grateful for today. They kind of do an inventory, kind of a similar version of like a like an examine, very simplified examine. They'll do that. And then depending on the chaplain and like what they end the evening activity after our dance party, because it's our last night in camp, we do a big circle on the deck. This was actually started by Father Dean. A few years ago, but everyone gets in a big circle on the deck, and we have a closing prayer. And in that closing prayer, the campers say the thing that they're most grateful for from the week. And then he blesses them, the priest will bless them. And then we send them up to bed and they'll still usually do some kind of a bedtime prayer too. But that one's always, it's always fun. And it just feels good to hear like the kids say, like kids who came in on Sunday, like either homesick or like worried or like angry that they were at camp. I don't know why you'd be angry at camp, but whatever, like whatever, you know, their attitude might've been. And to have them just share, like, I'm just so grateful for the friends I've made. I'm so grateful for, like, they'll specifically call out a staff member. Like, I'm so grateful for Miss Elizabeth because she gave me mosquito repellent. Like, it'll be, I mean, some of it is silly, but it's not silly to that child, right? And it's so beautiful to hear them be, like, truly grateful for things that you kind of, as the staff member, like, I'm just doing, like, the things on my list.
Right.
But for this kid, it was, like, a big deal. And so that's always, it's always like my highlight of the week is getting to listen to that. Like, I make a point of like getting out of my office if I was in the office during part of dance party to be like, no, I got to hear this part. So, yeah.
Wow. There's a lot of spirituality at the
there is. Camp I mean, we're a Catholic camp. We take it seriously.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You get some non-Catholic kids, huh?
Yeah, of course. We'll get some non-Catholic kids, friends of, or you know, maybe their parents went to Pendola and they're not active in the faith anymore.
Right.
But yeah, so we definitely get from any denomination. Everyone is welcome. The caveat is we are a Catholic camp. We are going to have Mass. Your kid will be at Mass. They don't have to, obviously they won't receive communion, but yeah, they will have to be there and they will be there and we expect them to be respectful of our traditions. So
makes sense.
I mean, you signed your kid up for a camp that calls itself a Catholic camp. I would hope that you would understand that. I've never had anyone push back on me, so I think they all do.
I'm sure people are fine with it.
Yeah. Generally, I think it's good. Yeah.
Jennifer, or Miss Jen,
thank you, Bob.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for all you do. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. We'll talk with you again soon.
Sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain. I'm
it falls, I'll raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away. Can't find you, but as the thunder